Good afternoon. Welcome to the Order of Time. Today, I would like to talk to you about illusions. People suffer illusions, and we all know what it is when you break down, when you are disappointed, when you are disillusioned, you know what illusion is. It was a lover, it was a friend, it was your favorite politician, and now they're not so favorite anymore. You tried this, you tried that, and when it fails, you're disillusioned. So, we suffer illusions. Illusion shows us a world which is dangerous. We have all kinds of illusions, and this makes our reality unreliable. And the world we construct turns out to be in compensation. We imagine all kinds of things which are not deeply or firmly rooted in reality. And this, we fall down. We fall from that illusion. And this is not nice, because it is not our honor to be illusioned, to love a girl and she turns you down, or a girl loves you and you can't be true to what you seem to promise. So this is a problem, because disappointed, people can resort to means and strategies that are very unfavorable and sometimes the exact opposite of what we wanted. And then we are more spiteful, hateful, negative with what we loved than before. Sometimes you go to the other extreme. First you love and then you hate. And this is all the result of illusion. So, illusion shows you a world that is possibly also a world of lies. Because if you are in illusion, it is not said that the one who gave you that illusion, the one attached to that illusion by your own attachment or by his own making, presented you a wrong image. Somebody cheated you, a politician, with illusions, is not only fooling himself, he's also fooling you. Just as you are fooling that other person, presenting yourself better than you are, for instance. And still you do so because it's your honor. Yeah? You believe in yourself and you make the best of it. So it is a tricky point. Lie for goodwill, lie for the better. It's a pretty normal. People do it regularly. And from that we have a world of illusion, which is also a lie. The difference between lies and illusions is in the consciousness. When you know that you are speaking untruth, you are lying, and that is conscious. And when you drop out of it, out of your position, out of your presentation, you are disillusioned, out of your expectations with the world. You expect to be a great physician or a great whatever, and it doesn't work, and then you are disillusioned. That's not directly a lie when you are illusioned. We do not call you a liar when you are in a state of illusion. But still, it seems to be a lie. That what we hold on to and turns out not to be that firm, not to be that deserving, our love and attention, that could be a lie. So let's go deeper into this reality of illusion, consciousness, and lies. illusion is based on not seeing things as they are. So we have to define our reality thus unequivocally, so that we are certain of we derive from certain knowledge, knowledge that cannot escape us, things that are very sure. This certain knowledge about the world, the reality, is in fact fourfold. We have the threefold of the world as we know it, in Christian-wise called the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. But more soberly, that would be, to the fact that we witness, would that be time, space, and matter. That's all there is, time, space, and matter. And any form of it, any construct of it, might be an illusion. Tomorrow it's gone, today it's there. Something that is not there the next moment, we tend to consider as an illusion. So, but that what is eternal, what is always there, we call true, true knowledge, true fact, true principle, or true person. So the person of God we consider true. It's for the religion, the principle to respect that person we call true, because it always works that way, that we shouldn't kill and steal, etc. And that's also the true of the fact, the material universe. There's always matter, there's always space, and there's always time. So this is certain knowledge. This is not an illusion. The material world is not an illusion, even though the form can be temporary, an illusion. Space is not an illusion. There is definitely a difference between matter and non-matter, and space is the connecting element between, in between material things. And the time is the movement of it all. So matter, time, and space, they are firm basis to speak about what is real and what is not real. There's something on top of that threefold, and that's the integrity of those three. The integrity is a fourth element, so to speak. And sometimes we call it the person, the integrity of matter, space, and time. Sometimes we call it God, the complete, the category, there for everything, comprising everything. So that's a kind of fourth element. This fourth element is a dimension of its own. It's the dimension of integrity. And integrity is respected also threefold, as I said, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. But that's a Christian preference, so it's difficult to speak to all if we keep a religious preference. So what does it mean, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost? Huh? The Father is usually considered the person of God, and the Son is there for the principle, to remind us of the commandments and to follow in the love for our fellow men and the virtues and values connected. And there's also the simple creation, which is also belongs to the integrity of time, space, and matter. And that is what we call the factual, because the person can be an illusion. You don't see it, the person in the beyond, and the principle can be an illusion. You can pray it, but do you practice it? But the fact is, that's the pretty solid foundation. According many scientists, that's the real purpose of it all. So we knew this already from our study in Velognosy, as we discussed. So there's fact, principle, and person as the three basic disciplines concerning the integrity of time, space, and matter. So we have these two dimensions of the basic elements of reality, we respect with a certain discipline. So to time, there's the fact. Time is a fact. Principle is also time. Time as a principle we also know. Time as a fact we know as the order of time. If you look at a clock or a calendar, it's a manifestation, a fact of time. Normally time is just the movement you see in the universe. But we respect it because there's order in it. And there's a cyclic nature to it, from a rising and a setting sun and a full moon and a new moon. And that is the fact of time, the natural fact of the original integrity of time. That's the order of time. Next, there is the principle of time. The principle of time is the law, the agreement, the legal settlement of time. And that's the principle of order. We manage that not just as a naked fact of a rising and a setting sun. No, we have a certain qualification for that order. And that is called the legal settlement of time. The government has agreed upon a certain direction of time, which is important because then we can have meetings and agreements and the entire society, in fact. The third discipline we have with time is that of the person. Time can be a person. So if every Sunday attending to Mass, to the Holy Mass, or to the shul, or to in the mosque, to the service there, we respect the person with time. Time associated with the person gives us religion. These are the three basic truths of time: the order of time, the law of time, and the religion about it, to respect the person of time. Muhammad insists that God is respected with the pure sun and moon. Christ insists that the Father Time is respected on earth as he is in heaven, and he identifies with that Father too. So he's the person of time, all right. So, and also Krishna to the Hindus says, "I am the time." Do not be mistaken. I am the time. And even though the time is the impersonal aspect, to respect the time is something very personal. So we choose a time, and this we respect the person. The person is the principle and the order of time. It's the culmination of it. Our genes are a log of time conditioning. We are manifestations of time. Person is manifested, is a manifestation of time, time order. So these are three basic truths: time order, the law, and the religion. But there's more. We had three elements. There's also space. Space is the emptiness, common knowledge. Space is nothing. Space is the in-between everything. But it's also more than that. It's not simply emptiness. It's a force field, because space is defined by the cyclic of nature, by a field, by the solar system, by the galaxy. The space is defined. So space has properties. It is not a substance, but it's a force. And this is very important, because to the integrity of it all, we know the original integrity of the person as a control of forces, as a oneness of the forces of nature, which is pretty special. We are special. We are created after the original ideal of it. So the religions say. So space is very close to what we call God. It's the connecting element, it's the force field that settles the order of the sun and the moon and the stars, and then the heavens are created by God. The earth is following, as above, so below. That's what Christ reminds us of to pray. So space has also three disciplines. We have a discipline with the factual reality of a space, which is its force field. The space is a power, force, controlling our lives. This is a fact. This is not a theory. This is a fact. Space controls the field, and we are part of it. We are controlled by that space, by the ether, the force field of space. We, from traditional philosophy, call the ether. Recently, it has been doubted in the 20th century. Einstein considered it not necessary to consider the ether as an essential element. But later in 1920, he lectured in Holland at the University of Leiden, and he said, well, sorry, I've been mistaken, or in a paper just before that he wrote that. And I was too radical, denying the reality of the ether. So the ether does exist, even according Einstein, even though he initially denied it. And that is special. To his example, we may learn what it means to be a scientist, to be of trial and error. You try without the ether and you conclude that we can't without. So the ether is a fact. It's a power, it's a force ruling our lives. The next is there the principle of space, which we call intelligence, seeing the difference, making the difference, being experienced with the difference that time displays with material things in space. We know the difference. We know as a oneness of intelligence the differences of matter. This is what makes us intelligent. We remember that it draws a trace through our brain, and we can manage that as information. It is the space that is the unity of all this, and the unity and command of all this is very close to the reality of the ether. We are ethereal beings in a material world. So this is a principle of intelligence. The more we know this, the better we are on top of things, and are we able to control this. The third option of space is the space related to the person. If we occupy a certain space, if we demand a certain space, like a nation, a country, a continent, or a whole world, we are a certain species with a certain eye awareness, which we call ego. And this the space has a personal property. We consider it also property, but then the ego is not that pure. The ego is simply the I, and it's false if we call it our personal property, if we do not share the space, the country, the home, the continent, and this world. So there's a strong notion of personal meaning to the concept of space and ether. It's the self of the intelligence and power. That's our ego. So we have time order, the law, religion, power, intelligence, and ego as the six to time and space concerning the three disciplines I mentioned. There's a third option of matter, which is also important if we want to discuss what is real and what is not real. Apart from these six realities, real existences of order, law, religion, ego, intelligence, and power, there's also the material world for itself. We are pretty well known with the material world. That's about the only thing you are solid with. Time is passing by, and space you can is difficult to grasp and know in its entirety. But matter is what you can touch. It's concrete. So as a fact, matter as a fact is, as a matter of fact, we have work to do to settle order in the world of matter. We have a culture which is a settlement of matter. There's also politics when we are to the principle with this matter. To be fair with the matter is a matter of principle, and this we call politics. Today I will speak a bit longer, because this is a complicated subject, so I'll speak for a double talk, 40 minutes. As I said, politics is the reality human beings have when they want to be integral with material matters. For himself can be heartening his material interest, but to be peaceful in a society, we need a few laws and rules to regulate our material lives. As said, there's the law setting the order of time. There's the intelligence, which is also an important principle to be intelligent, to be of knowledge with space, to tell differences, to have a consciousness. And there's politics to settle everything to the law, just. We have to be just and fair with each other. Otherwise, we'll be in conflict and we'll have wars about it. So there's a third option to the interest of matter, and that is when we apply matter to the individual person. As I said, there's an ego covering a certain space. But there's also a material exchange moving about time and space with our material existence. This is regulated with money, with capital. Money is a reality of human life. And if we perform labor as a fact to the material world and have politics as a principle to the material world, we have capital to be just with the person. Politics regulate money. We pay taxes and the government invests in all kinds of societal interests of importance to our peaceful society. If we are just with everyone, if we are righteous and doing justice to each individual, if we respect the human rights, if we are as it should to the principles of humanity, then money is not really a problem. Then money is a reality of righteous exchange of service and adaptation and goods. So these are then nine basic facts about our reality, the reality of time, space, and matter, respected with the three disciplines of the fact, the person, and the principle. With the three disciplines, delivers us this schedule of nine basic truths of our life, and that is the order of time, the law, the religion to time, to space, power, intelligence, and ego, and to matter we have labor, politics, and capital. So we can be glad with this, but as for the truth of it, it can also be a lie. The order of time can be a lie because it's not the natural fact of time. If the facts do not match with the source of it, the natural order of it, we speak of a lie. If 12 o'clock is 1 o'clock, then we are uncertain where the middle of the day is. Where is noon? Noon is an agreement of should be an agreement of law. The middle of the day. That's what a dictionary says. If it's different, if noon, 12 o'clock, is not the middle of the day, then we have another order of time, which is not true. It's in fact an illusion to call that an order. It is not really an order because we do not know where the middle is anymore. It could be 1:30, 11:30. God knows where we are in China, so to speak. So this was a basic problem, the order of time. We can have laws about it, but the law instituting standard time, which is our own making of time, our own relative truth about time, can also be an illusion because the law, in fact, violates the human rights, imposing us with a lie. We are obliged to lie about the time of nature. It is not handy. They call it pragmatical time management, and there's all kinds of arguing about it. But effect is effect. we have 2 orders of time, and there's only one middle of the day. And the middle of the day is, as we know, when the sun passes the meridian. And if the law says it different, then the law is a lie. And then we have a problem, because now we have a society with a time order and a law which are untrue, which are a lie, or if we believe in it ignorantly, we suffer an illusion. It might be not the safe harbor of God that we expect from the law and the order of time. And so it is with the religion. If we attend to Mass, Holy Mass, or the shul, or the mosque, we do that on Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays. That's a religion. We respect the holy example of God. But do we really accord with the commands of our saints and prophets? If not, then our religion could be considered a lie. If we cannot define the Friday, for instance, as a Muslim, you cannot define the Friday as a pure manifestation of the sun or the moon. It is a cultural date. It is not fixed on the moon. It is not fixed on the sun. So Muhammad told the Muslim to be faithful to the pure of the sun and the moon. But this is not true. Just as the Sunday, it is not, as Jesus said, on earth as it is in heaven. It is not the lunar phase we have every 7.5 days. Because if we would follow religiously the moon, then we would have to leap our week order every fortnight. But we don't do this. So the religion is in respect of a cultural aspect and tries to pray it right, so to speak. But then the religion becomes a compensation, a compensatory manifestation. And compensations fail, and we end in war and self-destruction. And where's God? Where's the religion? It was a lie. So now Christians and Muslims are fighting each other, and Muslims are fighting themselves, because we are not proper with the time, not to the Prophet, nor to Jesus, nor to Krishna. So this order of time, this law, and this religion can be a lie. And so the power, the intelligence, and the ego, when it's about space, and space is the power ruling the universe, it's the power that makes our lives. But if we are in politics desiring power, desiring to assume control over our fellow man in the form of a government with a dictate of whether democratic or not, doesn't really matter. It is imposed temporary or for a longer time. And that is the power we desire to exercise. But is this really the power that is real? The real power is the power of the eater, controlling the positions of the sun and the moon and the stars. But do politicians follow that power? And if there are two powers, then which power is greater? Is the dictator or the democratic president, is he greater than God? I don't think so. Nor does anybody else, nor does he himself. But still, we desire control and power, missing the point of what power really means. And then we find ourselves neurotic and schizoid, split up in the different authorities of power. We have a natural power, and we have a cultural power, and we are torn apart, and we are miserable because of this illusion of self-made power. And then there's also the intelligence. One can be intelligent as a principle, knowing, telling differences in space. But is this really the intelligence according the eater? We mentioned Einstein as an example. He's a rare example because he halfway converted to the reality of the natural truth of the eater as a determinant in our lives, first denied and then acknowledged. And thus, which Einstein is now intelligent, the old one in denial or the converted one saying, well, okay, we have space and we have time, and time is relative to the place we are. And so that to each moment the time is differs, and that is correct. Time depends on the place. We can tell that from a sundial. But time is not as relative as Einstein maybe said, Time is an absolute of change the same way as it is relative to the place. So the moment shows us a different time to the place, but it's still absolute in its changing quality. So what is the intelligence? Is the intelligence the denial of the ether or the acknowledgement of the ether as a controlling force in our lives? So the intelligence of science and the scientists can be an illusion. We can be illusioned about what would be true and what would not be true. We have paradigms of control and, again, different authorities, just like with politics. So to be smart is not to be wise. To be intelligent doesn't mean that you are experienced, because it can still be a compensation, a theory which collapses and which does not cover the reality and which does not offer us a stable, safe, and reliable society and fellow men. So we arrive at the third position, the third discipline to the space, and that's the person, the ego, can also be an illusion. We can be illusioned about identifying us with our bodies, because our bodies will die, and possessed with fear of dying, we do all kinds of stupid things, because we think we die identified with the body. You certainly do die physically, but as a soul, no, you don't die. You are remembered. Your integrity is holographically remembered in all people that you know, and after you died, you continue your life with a pretty realistic image of reality as a focus of all these different views on your person. So that at least that's how you are remembered. And remembering an integrity, that integrity might remember itself too. And that is you then. So yes, there might be an afterlife. There might be a position of limbo wherein you have to decide to be an angel or return to Earth to make it up, which is also both possible. But that's a matter of the ego. Now we are fair with the ego, discovering that there's a false ego too. You can be identified and attached to that material self, and thus fall down because of that falsehood. You are attached to that physical manifestation, your false ego, while your true ego, the true ego, that was your soul. The third discipline, the third aspect of reality was the material. The material universe also offers us these three aspects of a true existence, which is the existence of labor, politics, and the capital. So labor, we can also be illusioned about labor. We can have illusions that we are working when we are making money. But still, there's also voluntary labor, which is also making money, which is the social security check. And people tend to consider that an employment. If you work as a volunteer for a social security check, you are seem to be considered a lesser person, which is not really just or true. Because you may wonder whether we serve God better as a volunteer or as a moneymaker. Maybe the exact purpose of making money, going for the profit, is exactly the karma which the Indians speak about, which is a hindrance in serving God without an ulterior motive. So the labor as a volunteer might be true labor, and labor for a salary might be a lie if you do that consciously, or might be an illusion. You might discover that it doesn't work, it doesn't give you the society and the togetherness and the righteousness that you had in mind, because making money can be done with unfair means. So in politics, if we are more to the principle with the material interest, we see in politics also that people are more or less financed, being paid to disagree, This disagreement is financed by the people. So in fact, if you pay politicians a salary, you finance that disagreement, which is maybe correct in the sense of the law, because you have your expenses. It might be correct to the economy, because we have to receive capital in order to spend it. But in behavioral terms, to reinforce a difference of opinion might not be the right policy, because then our politics and politicians could very well be false. And we are not true to the reality of our political selves if we are just in opposition because it pays good money. So this is not a favorable thing, and from that argument you could say politicians shouldn't receive a salary at all. That they should all be volunteers, and even be condemned for having an ulterior motive if they do it for something else than serving the righteous principle of dealing with matter. So this is a perspective on politics which shows politicians as illusioned people, and of course we all work with the necessities of life, and politicians of course are also people with good intentions, but there's a difference between politicians and officials. The state needs to be represented with officials who settle order of the state by law, and the law must be reinforced and checked and also discussed. So this is a righteous matter, and that is not wrong, of course. But there tends to be a financing of ego, which might be reinforcing the falsehood of it all. So you could consider a politician a civil servant who's simply serving the state as an official. So, but it can also be an ego trip of power, repressing others to be financed for a pack of lies. So it's a two-edged sword, and we have to be aware of this, so that we are not disillusioned in our political endeavors to settle order for the state and for the whole world. Finally, there is the third option to the person relating to matter, and that is capital, money. Money is a normal good of exchange, but and if a proper circulation of money we call a good economy. But it is not always that pure, purely managed. When it's good for the economy, it might be bad for the third world. If it's good for your purse, it might be bad for the purse of your fellow man. So a good economy is not necessarily a righteous economy. So the mission of managing capital in politics and to settle labor as a fact is to be righteous with the capital. We have to be just, and then we see realities like making money as a game, as a sport. Where's the millions? Where's the billions? He's the winner, and the loser has nothing, or is in the streets. And exclusion of ourselves as human beings is a bad affair. We should never allow that people to drop out of the system. You can be at the bottom of it, or you can be at the top of it. But this game should be settled righteously, so that we do not have dropouts, and we do not suffer an all too great economic imbalance, because that's a syndrome of materialism. These are the lies I wanted to discuss with you. Thank you for your attention.